Welcome back to the I Teach Podcast. I am your host, Ronald Catlin, and on the I Teach Podcast, we delve into educational topics like personalized learning, instructional coaching, the maker movement, and where we get a chance to meet the incredible teachers, administrators, coaches, and students that are out there doing the work every day. I want to welcome you guys to episode 2, EdTech and Closing the Achievement Gap. In this episode, we're going to be discussing how we can utilize technology integration in the curriculum in order to close the achievement gap. I will be joined by my first guest, Andrew Conley, who will be introduced in the lesson portion of the show. I think this is very interesting that we talk about EdTech and closing the achievement gap, because one of the most polarizing topics in our national discourse is how to address the disparity in educational achievement between different demographic group of students. The achievement gap between students of different socioeconomic backgrounds has been consistently widening over the past few decades. The imbalance between students from wealthy families completing college compared to students from low-income families has increased by 50% since the 1980s. But the facts show that the key to closing the achievement gap is not providing more technology to students, but rather putting the right ed tech into the hands of teachers. So sit back, relax, and let's start the show. All right, so we're in the lesson portion of the show, and I have a guest with me that's going to be talking about EdTech and closing the achievement gap. He is an assistant principal at Shaw Avenue Elementary School in Valley Stream, New York. He's always on Twitter sharing great positive quotes and resources. I could really sense from our exchange that this guy is very optimistic and has great energy. He has also recently started his own podcast called The EduConley, where he shares stories, discuss pedagogy, and exchange tips for how to survive and thrive in your edu journey. And a fun fact, I think he's probably the first assistant principal that I know to have his own GIF. So without further ado, I welcome Andrew Conley to the show. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you. Very, very happy to be here. Thanks for the shout outs.
Yeah. So, before we get into it, like, how did you get your own GIF? Like, how does that work?
Yeah, it's disputed whether it's a GIF or a GIF, but yeah. So I just kind of went on a online free generator and thought, hey, you know what? This is kind of cool instead of a picture. And I just kind of went for it, you know?
That's cool that you now, like, you can use your own reaction of you for, like, stuff
right.
on social media.
Right.
So just a quick icebreaker. If you won the lottery and decided to, like, give up education or teaching, what would you do instead?
Oh geez. You know what? My poor New York Mets need some new management, so maybe I'll buy the team and fix up the joint. You know, maybe that'll be my new life.
Be a CEO of a sports team.
Right.
Hey, that'll be a good life.
Yeah.
All right. So, like, what makes a good day for you at school? Like, when you go to work, if you can, like, when you reflect after you get off, what makes a good day for you?
Well, so, you know, it's a simple question, but one I've never been asked before. And it's a really good one. I think what makes a good day is if I could just go through my checklist of supporting people. You know, I really hate when any type of, like, action item is left unattended to, because I'm always trying to, whether it's a child or a teacher or even my principal, I really try and be dependable and reliable. And mm-hmm. and it's definitely a good day if I could get to everything that I planned to get to help everybody. So I would say then that would be a full good day.
Yeah, well, you feel like you can really just feel like you accomplished a lot and actually checked it off.
Definitely.
Yeah. Yeah. That's good. And last question. So what kind of morning routine do you have to get, like, yourself ready for work? Like, what's some essentials that you have to do to get yourself, like, jazzed up?
Yeah. Let's see. You know, I kind of just jump right into it, but I would definitely say, like I said, I go through any action items I didn't get to before. Something that's kind of a silly answer, but I think it's true. You know, looking good is feeling good. I like to have my tie, matching socks, and yeah. the whole thing. So I could feel like I'm, you know, I'm in the role and people see me as the role, and then we could go from there, you know?
Yeah, so that's a good asset, you know, look good to feel good. When you feel
Right.
good, you perform good, you know?
It's all positivity. That's
Yeah.
right.
So, jumping into the achievement gap.
Sure.
I think the most significant challenge in eliminating the achievement gap that school and district leaders face is changing the institutional practices and mindsets of staff that negatively impact students of color. My question is, what kind of impact do you think principals play on the mindset of their campus with closing the achievement gap? And what actions do you think they can do to engage in closing the achievement gap on their campus?
Yeah. Well, first and foremost, we steer the ship, right? So I think it's important to kind of collectively with your faculty assess the current reality by way of analyzing your data, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that sometimes does involve staff development to understand the nuance and the intricacies of triangulating and disaggregating the data that,
mm-hmm.
you know, is can be specific to a multitude of student designations and understanding what it's telling you about the levels of student achievement. I think you got to get a base knowledge of that first. And then, you know, we're really, you know, the teaching staff needs to come to a consensus about what is our current state of affairs. That's critical.
Mm-hmm.
And then the leader's job is to kind of get things moving. So let's create some guiding ideas to achieve this vision. And whatever the vision is would need to be collectively thought through to hold everybody accountable. So, for example, you know, what do we want a graduate of our school to look like in terms of skill set? And once we decide on that, it's all about, okay, well, now how do we get them there? And
right.
that kind of backward style of thinking, in my opinion, is imperative for the principal or the APs or whoever the admin team is to kind of drive home. And then from that, I think we could develop now our school's core values and beliefs, and everything could really start to take shape, and everyone can become mission aligned to closing whatever, you know, specific or broad achievement gaps exist within your school. And then,
mm-hmm.
you know, especially considering those subgroups of your, you know, your English language learners or what have you. I think that's the start, at least, to establishing a mindset and a culture of excellence. Definitely.
Yes, yes. I agree. I think I agree with your point of saying that starting with the current reality. I think that's very important because I think that the principals, you know, they should be very, you know, committed and passionate about, you know, eliminating achievement gaps. So you can't do
right.
that if you don't know where to start. So
right.
I think it's
yeah.
very important. I mean, it's also another good point is like where it starts with the kind of people that the principals hire to work with their students and making sure that
sure.
they have like those teachers who have high expectations. And then I think also once you get those people in place that you provide, you know, the support and just like you said, the training to be, you know, effective teachers. So I think you made some
good
points.
No, it's certainly a good point. I think we need to be, you know, conscious of some unconscious biases, which I guess is a little bit of an oxymoron, but
yeah.
I think it's very interesting when conversations kind of veer off into, you know, what makes teachers happy and things like that. And we need to stay aligned to and anchored down to, well, what is best for kids, you know?
Right, yeah,
let's,
students.
Yes, let's keep the conversation there. I think that's really, really important.
Yes, yes. So the next thing that I want to touch on is teacher expectations. And this is just some information. Some may be true, some may be not. But some teachers have low expectations for African-American and Latino students in particular for many different reasons.
Mm.
There is a higher percentage of African-American students referred to special education or diagnosed with having an emotional and behavior disorder, and fewer African-American students placed in advanced and gifted programs. Another reason maybe is because language barriers for ELL students who are very capable students but struggle to show what they know because the assessment and instructional practices at their school limit their ability to demonstrate their proficiency.
Sure.
And also there may be a lack of cultural competence on the part of the educators and school personnel. So my question is, why is it important that teachers have high expectations for all learners.
Yeah, it's absolutely critical. I understand and I could feel for teachers in the respect that it's really is truly hard to really accurately differentiate for every learner in your room. It really, really is difficult, especially when you have a class of 25 to 30 children, all who could bring many different needs, you know, mm-hmm. and competency levels. So mm-hmm. it's definitely hard, but, you know, that's our job. I do think adopting the mindset that student designation impacts the strategy, not the expectation, mm-hmm. right? So I think we have many different strategies to reach many different children. We should not lower our expectations by any means. So, you know, remaining unbiased and instructing all groups with fidelity is definitely crucial. I also think that kids notice everything, and we shouldn't discount that. So it's our job as educators to constantly stay ahead and push every child kind of just outside their comfort zone, because that's where the true growth can occur. And the only way to really do that, like you said, is just to uphold the high expectations and consistent classroom culture that values, most importantly, hard work and determination over achievement per se. Because even when you praise or publicly, you know, positively narrate, you want to make sure you're distinguishing between the fact that you're not praising the person, you're praising the behavior for what you're looking for. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of times children can attach, if you have very vague praise, like, oh, that's awesome, instead of praise like, oh, I really love how you annotated that text to, mm-hmm. you know, blah, blah, blah. I think that specificity is critical to showing kids that, you know, you're not praising the actual person, you're praising the targeted skills you're looking for. Right. And I think that could uphold expectations, because at the end of the day, the teaching profession has become, you know, we wear many hats. We, in some cases, we are the psychologist and the therapist and the motivational speaker and the teacher and the caretaker. So it's a lot, but I think, you know, teachers can get overwhelmed, and they really shouldn't, because you could keep it simple just by staying specific and explicit mm-hmm. with what you want from your kids. I think that, you know, lastly, that gray area of, you know, sit the right way and, you know, don't do that. Well, those are such vague commands, right? Like, what is the right way? We don't know mm-hmm. what the right way was at this child's home. Maybe the right way at his home is laying on the couch. Right. So you really have to, you know, like spell it out and say, you know, you sit with your, you know, your knees and feet underneath the desk, your back right. up against the chair, and really delineate that information clearly, mm-hmm. I think could help uphold expectations for every learner. And kids respect, you know, it's not an exercise in power, right? You're not trying to flex on these kids, because then you'll get the disrespect. Right. What you're doing is it's an exercise in purpose. You're there for them to help them become a better human, essentially. Right. So I think all of that is kind of why it's important to have high expectations.
Right. And I remember when I was in undergrad and one course, my professor would not let us leave. Even if the time was already passed for the class, she would not let us leave without explaining that we must have high expectations for all learners. So mm-hmm. when I think about that, I was like, wow, that's really important. Now, once I got into the field, like, I really understood why she did that. Like, she would make sure that we knew that before sure. we left her class every day. And I was in college, so I was like, and just hearing about and just being in the field is really, you really get to see the different levels of expectations that teachers have for students.
Yeah, unfortunately, yeah. Instead of a consistent level, it definitely varies. That's why I believe in, like, school-wide systems. I'm a big believer in that. I mean, if I could use a New England Patriots plug here, a shameless fan plug. I mean, you look at their sustained excellence over two decades, and with different players plugged in the mix, I mean, that's clearly a system at work. I truly believe in systems to even help out teachers, because let's be honest, true teaching and upholding high expectations is exhausting. Yeah. It really is. And it could take a mental toll on teachers and a physical toll. I mean, not to joke around, but you really have to be in shape to truly facilitate around a room. Like, my feet would be killing me by the end of the day.
Yeah.
So I think the, you know, systems are definitely an answer to alleviating or remedying that problem of, you know, teacher in room one has high expectations, teacher in room two has a different culture. Like, that whole thing can create, you know, not the best school-wide culture.
Yeah, school-wide. Yep. I agree. So my next question is that schools that are able to close the achievement gap embrace instructional practices that are student-centered. What is your favorite instructional practice that you like to see at your school?
I think without question, I would say embedded formative assessment, because if that's not happening, if we're not creating measurable learning targets and then constantly checking for understanding throughout the course of the lesson to see where our learners are, or to diagnose misconceptions in real time and then, mm-hmm. you know, improve the learner's experience overall, to make sure we're moving the bell curve for our classes, then, you know, in my opinion, we're simply just not doing the job of teaching. So it's really that simple.
Yeah.
So I would say embedded formative assessment, but that takes planning, right? You need to plan out your checks for understanding to scaffold the learning. And then by the summative assessment, whatever it is, a test or an exit ticket or whatever you're, you know, employing as a practice, students should feel confident walking into that because the instruction has led them to believe that they're going to achieve, right? It shouldn't. Too many times I hear about, you know, kids are shocked or it's so hard. Well, then that should tell you as the teacher, then you need to up the rigor of your instruction and to be preparing them. So, you know, and you prepare them once again by those embedded formative checks for understanding. So I would definitely say that is something that I think you could really grow a strong pedagogy off of, definitely.
Right. I like the assessment. I guess my favorite one is the having the students connect and apply what they're learning to their personal lives.
Sure.
And I think that ties back into them being ready to connect for the assessment, and back into the teacher's instruction of how they are reaching the students.
Sure.
Which I think in, you know, will provide better results for your students when they are able to test, because they feel like it's relevant and it's, you know, they're connected to it. So
yeah,
I think that's my favorite instructional practice. So yeah. All good points. So as we start to talk about technology, what techniques with technology do you think teachers can use to help close the achievement gap?
So I think anything, I think anything to constantly improve our practice, right? So any technology that can provide like diagnostic data on proficiency levels, once again, to kind of go back to assessing our current reality, mm-hmm. this is more on like a granular level to use some diagnostic data to assess and find out the points where we could then react and create personalized learning pathways to target individual needs. I think that's a win. So, you know, because every child is working at skills for which they're currently exhibiting deficits, we can really make positive change through various technological programs that offer such platforms that could provide those interventions and those personalized pathways that we could then check up on. Mm-hmm. I think that's where, because essentially technology and good ed tech, right? It's supplementing and enriching the actual curriculum and the learner's experience. So right. If we could enrich by providing tailored, personalized, you know, targeted instruction, I think that's the point that you want to use tech for.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, there's many programs out there, and I'm not saying that programs are pedagogy necessarily.
Right.
All I'm saying is you could use those, you know, those technology, you know, I'm thinking of like an eSpark or a Kickboard or things like this, where we could find out more data on a student to then help us in our lessons to target those areas of need.
Right. Yeah. So I think it's just about, you know, just like you said, like finding that right blend.
Right.
Between, you know, teachers and technology to use it to help close the achievement gap.
Right.
I think also maybe we can like just have, I think when we use the technology for students to create and explore.
Definitely.
I think that's something that a technique that a lot of teachers can maybe use. But it's a lot of like steps that we have to get with using, with getting teachers to use technology.
Right.
And I think once we kind of like start addressing those barriers and those challenges and those fears, I think that we can start to move towards a place where teachers are going to become comfortable with using technology, because I feel like technology isn't going anywhere. And it's going to be constantly evolving. So, at one time or another, you know, they're going to have to kind of like get on board. And I just hope that the educational programs in college, like at universities, are embedding technology into their curriculum to prepare, you know, teachers, new teachers in the profession to start using technology.
Right. Yeah, I definitely think, you know, the fear probably stems from that, you know, they're going to be replaced with technology, but that's clearly not the case, because I think, right, you know, the crux of the teaching profession is relationships and human to human interaction. And I just think you're right. I think you nailed it, that it's a comfort level thing. And I think that denotes, you know, more training and more professional development, but you know, the program, like I said, is not pedagogy. And I think right now a lot of schools are at the point where teachers think if you hop a kid on an iPad or a Chromebook or then that's the intervention. But that's not the intervention. That's just the program being used. So I think it's just more education for the teachers and the teaching staffs of schools to understand how to properly utilize it. Like you said, and you know, our biggest problem in not my school in particular, I'm just talking generally, our biggest problem in my opinion in education right now is we're still creating regurgitators of information, right? And we're still trying to get students to really take on this ownership and be forward thinkers and critically think and be solution oriented. And I think, you know, plopping a kid on an iPad, like I said, that's not helping. So we could use the tech to move forward, but we can't use the tech as the sole thing to get our kids there, because it's just not going to work.
Right. I think we have to probably just get teachers to embrace a blended learning approach.
Right. Yeah, I agree.
Right. Yeah. So I guess if we can just kind of remove that, that thought that, you know, the technology will replace the teacher, and just have them, you know, just have a good model system for them, I guess, that they can see that this can actually, you know, help them and it won't replace them.
Right. And there's no, you know, you're, like we said earlier, you're trying to differentiate and reach every, you know, modality of learning and, you know, mode of intelligence. And it's just one layer to the whole pie. So I think the anxieties surrounding it is probably just, it's not necessarily defiance, but maybe just perhaps some incompetence on how to work certain things, which is totally fine. But we definitely have to get our teachers and, you know, myself as an administrator, you have to constantly be seeking out learning opportunities to stay on board with what's going on. Because things are just changing so drastically. But yeah, I agree. Yeah.
All right. So, so for schools and teachers that don't have a technology-based curriculum yet, what strategies would you suggest to them to get one started?
Yeah, so I think everything that I just ran through can absolutely still be achieved without any tech whatsoever. Like, I mean, how do we think teaching has been happening for like centuries now, right?
Yeah.
Just understand where your students are and extrapolate that data to understand where the deficits lie, and then create interventions and tailored instruction to target those weaknesses, and just keep that's the cycle, right? Like, it's just an endless cycle, and that's called teaching to improve the student outcomes. So all of that, you don't need technology for that. You just need good assessments and good questioning, and you know, that's true instructional pedagogy is questioning, because truthfully there's really only two reasons to ask a question, right? It's to get data and then to respond to that data. So if you ask if you ask kids questions in your class, you should be a data seeker, essentially. You know, you ask the first kid, they get it wrong. Okay. Second kid, they get it wrong. Okay. Third kid, they get it right. You shouldn't be thinking, oh, they get it now. No, only one out of three got it. So you should be looking at it as points of data rather than like a narrative of how your class is performing. Right. So there's really no tech needed in that. That's just good, strong practice.
Mm-hmm. Right. I agree with that. Like how you said, it's been, we've been teaching without technology. I do just think that the technology can just provide effective and efficiency ways for them to do things. Not saying that it's needed, but it'll just help them with that.
Yeah, it'll definitely be harder if they don't have the
technology. Yeah, so it can enhance. Sure. Yeah, it can enhance just the things that they're doing, so they have that, so it won't be so time consuming.
Right.
But I also think that maybe having like a personnel or person on their campus or a coach that is kind of savvy and technology to support the teachers on their campus. Because I think maybe sometimes getting the funds to employ a full-time member to have like, you know, technology integration into their schools maybe hard.
Right.
So, you know, just that person on that that's tech savvy that can support the curriculum and the teachers at the school, I think that can be one strategy that schools can use.
I
remember meeting someone at the conference a few weeks ago where they wear many hats into the school, and they really wasn't like the quote unquote instructional technology specialist, but because of how small their school was, they was essentially that person. So it was just, you know, at least with them not having the budget to hire another person at their school, they were able to attend a conference and be the tech, you know, integration specialist for their school and bring back things for their school to use. And I think the school is like really small. It was like 100 people. I think they said 100 students total, and it was a K-8 school. It was a really small town. Yeah. So I was, and they were just telling me their story, and I was like, wow, this is interesting. So, yeah. So I think just having, you know, just somebody at least on the campus that, you know, I think a lot of teachers will appreciate that, just having somebody on the campus that can really help them with that also.
Yeah, yeah. I think, like we said, the teachers wear many hats. I think that now falls to the administrators, and we have to stay up to date on things because we're the, you know, the first chain of command to supporting the teachers. So,
right.
Yeah, that, I think you're right. And I think that can be in the forms of many roles, whether it's a colleague or a supervisor or, you know, somebody just on the staff to help. Definitely.
Right. So I enjoyed this conversation about EdTech and closing the achievement gap.
Mm-hmm, me as well.
Hopefully did you have a good time on the show?
I loved it, man. Thank you so much. I appreciate coming on.
And also tell the people where they can follow you on Twitter and social media and all kind of different outlets.
Sure. Yeah. As you said, I was chuckling when you said I'm always on Twitter. I am always on Twitter. Yes. You could find me at AJ Conley. That's AJCANLE. And I appreciate the shout out for my new podcast, the Edu Conley podcast. That's EDUCANLE. So very excited for that. I actually just launched my website, www.educonley.com. So it's, you know, I nerd out and I love talking education.
Is pretty cool. Yeah. And I was like, wow. So he has a podcast going, you know, you're just starting to get things off the ground. So you got your website, your podcast. I thought that was really cool. So I actually listened to your episode today. So.
Oh, nice. Thank you very much.
Yeah, and I enjoyed it. Yeah, I enjoyed it. I like the coin with the face on. I like the art, the graphic.
Yes. Yeah, be the change, my friend. Be the change. Yeah, it's essentially just I'm trying to provide some best practices and some PD for anybody who's willing to listen. And, you know, I enjoy it, so I'm happy that I have some listeners, definitely.
Right, right. And it's a good way to grow your PLN, so.
Definitely.
It's always exciting. So I hope you guys have enjoyed today's episode. As always, you can follow me on Twitter at SpiffyTechGuy. And you can follow KSU iTeach on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at KSU iTeach. And until next time, peace and love. The iTeach podcast is brought to you by the instructional technology coaches from iTeach at Kennesaw State University with the cooperation of the Instructional Technology Department and the Bagwell College of Education. You can reach out to us for more information, questions, or comments at our website, iteach.kennesaw.edu, or on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at KSU iTeach.